In Oregon, political candidates can take money directly from corporations. Not only that, but of the states that allow those transactions, Oregon ranks number one in corporate dollars per capita. And a recent series of stories in the Oregonian newspaper and its Oregon Live website pointed that out. The series also draws a direct line from the loose laws on campaign finance to the lax regulation of environmental transgressions. The series is called Polluted by Money. We invited reporter Rob Davis to join us, along with several other guests with some perspective on the issue. Rob Davis, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I want to welcome in as well J.T. Stapleton, who's a researcher at the National Institute on Money and Politics. Welcome, J.T.
Thank you for having me.
Money and Politics, I should have said. Pollux is a fish. Phil Kiesling, former Oregon Secretary of State, joins us as well with some perspective on campaign and campaign spending in Oregon. Phil Kiesling, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Senator Jeff Golden is with us as well from Ashland, who chairs the newly formed Senate Committee on Campaign Finance Reform. Senator Golden, thank you for joining us.
Jeff, it's great to be here. Thanks.
Okay, good to have you all here. Rob Davis, I'm going to spend a little time with you up first. 18 months you've been working on this story. What started the journey?
I've been a beat reporter covering the environment in Oregon for a number of years. And what I found was that the stories I wrote here consistently had a theme, which was to take an environmental issue and compare how Oregon was doing on it with how Washington and California were. And inevitably, California would be leading the way. Washington would be trying to do whatever California was doing, coming in a close second. And then Oregon would be bringing up the rear while patting itself on the back for passing the beach and bottle bills 50 years ago. And a number of issues that I wrote about went to the legislature to be addressed, and they ran into a buzzsaw year after year after year after year. Things like making sure that railroads are planning when they're hauling millions of gallons of oil, that they're planning for the potential of a spill like the one that happened in Mosier in 2016. The issue of aerial herbicide spraying in the Coast Range, which got a lot of attention in Gold Beach after people there were sprayed in 2013. These issues went to our citizen legislature, and then they went nowhere. And I wanted to know why that was, and why we seem to be kind of riding Tom McCall's coattails, and the environmental initiatives that were coming out of the legislature were things like, in the past 2 weeks, they banned fracking in the state for 10 years. There's no fracking in the state. It's non-controversial. It doesn't, affect any constituency. There's no money behind it. And so Oregon is one of five states in the country with no limits on donations to politicians. And when we started looking at the amount of money that was coming into the system for the size of the state population, the numbers were just mind-blowing.
So, for example, how much money from corporations into campaigns every year?
So we looked at election cycles from 2008 to 2016. And what you see when you look at the way that the pie is divided, about half of the money is coming from corporate America. There are some lawmakers that have, but the exception of a handful of checks from people that are family, every dollar that they take has come from a corporation. And so about $43 million from corporate America in that time, compared to, $11 million, I think, from labor unions. So the unions, ideological groups, and wealthy individuals don't come close. Notably, we found the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, which is the vehicle through which environmentally minded candidates are supported. They've given about 1% of what corporations have given in that time.
So J.T. Stapleton at the National Institute on Money and Politics, how unusual is Oregon in allowing all the contributions it allows?
Well, when it comes to direct contributions, it's fairly unique, though there are a series of others up until 2016, for example, like Missouri and Utah and others. So when you have this direct contribution from corporations, which is banned in a lot of other states, that's, you could say, is very unusual across the board. A lot of states ban it. But that's not to say corporations aren't spending money on politics. They can through a PAC. They just that means they have to register a PAC with the state and then solicit money explicitly to contribute to campaigns and engage in other political activity. So a lot of other states do allow that. And in fact, not quite a few allow unlimited amounts, for example, like Texas is one. So it's unusual in that it's direct. And also, I think somewhat unusual just because it's how long it goes back after the Supreme Court, I think in the 70s, said it was part of a free speech issue. So not a lot of states have that kind of history in recent years.
And so per capita, Rob Davis, what are we talking about? Like $10, was it, per every person in Oregon, $10 and change?
Yeah, we're number one. And his, you know, JT's point about direct contributions is an interesting one, because the fact that this is money that is going directly to these people, I think really matters, because it's money that they don't just spend on yard signs. It's money that they're spending on meals, hotels, the business of being a legislator. And they've found ways to ensure that it gets into their pockets. And boost their income. So, you know, that's an issue as well.
All right, much more to talk about direct corporate contributions to legislators in Oregon and lax environmental regulation that appears to be a direct line drawn by Rob Davis in his series in the Oregonian, Oregon Live, Polluted by Money. We also have J.T. Steepleton from the National Institute on Money and Politics, former Secretary of State Phil Kiesling, and Senator Jeff Golden. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange, and you can join the conversation in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Oregon is one of a very few states that allows direct corporate contributions to political candidates, and it seems like the corporations are making the most of it. A series in the Oregonian newspaper and its Oregon Live website pointed out a direct connection from loose laws on campaign finance to the lax regulation of environmental problems in Oregon, a long way from the beach bill, the bottle bill, and all the things of the Tom McCall years that stamped Oregon as environmentally forward. The series in the Oregonian called Polluted by Money. It's the work of Rob Davis, who spent 18 months on the story. We also have with us J.T. Steepleton, a researcher at the National Institute on Money and Politics, former Oregon Secretary of State Phil Kiesling, and Senator Jeff Golden, who chairs a newly formed Senate Committee on Campaign Finance Reform. You can join the conversation here at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Phil Kiesling, your time as Secretary of State would fall about the midpoint, it would seem, between the Tom McCall environmentally forward years and now. What are the pieces? How did Oregon get from where it was to where it is?
In terms of the environmental side or the campaign finance problem?
The campaign finance problem.
Well, by the 1990s, when I took office, there had been a sea change relative to the early 70s. In fact, during one of the cycles, there were literally strict campaign limits that were on elections. But by 1990, there were no limits, and we were having the most expensive legislative races in the country when you looked at how much candidates were raising and spending per voter. So you think about that. In the 1990s, this was already the case. Now, it's obviously not just corporate dollars, but other players are in there as well. But as one of the few states without limits, that's what we face. Now, we did a big effort in 1996 or 94. Oregon voters passed campaign finance reform and limits. Osberg led the fight for that. I was a big supporter of it. And we ran the 1996 cycle with very strict limits in place. But then that got thrown out as unconstitutional under Oregon state constitution, with the court, I think, arguably using some of the flawed legal reasoning that we found in the Citizens United case that now affects it at the national level. So this is not a new problem. It has just gotten a good deal worse, and the numbers are even higher than they were then. Back in the 90s, a closely contested legislative race might cost a candidate $50,000, $100,000. Today, candidates in those kind of similar races have to raise over $1 million.
Wow, that's a bit of a difference. So you're saying the state Supreme Court keeps viewing money as free speech, a la Citizens United?
Well, in 1997, that was the decision, that limiting campaign contributions by anyone to a candidate and limiting candidates' ability to accept said contributions, that violated the Oregon's Constitution's clause on free speech. And this gets to the current effort, which I know Senator Golden is involved in, which how do you fix that? And what kind of constitutional amendment language is now basically necessary because of that 1997 decision just to consider the issue of putting legal limits on campaign spending?
Perfect segue, Phil Kiesling. Senator Jeff Golden, in a preliminary scan, how hard would it be to change the system?
I think we can do it, and I think it's going to happen this year. Can I first say I really appreciate the work of Rob and the Oregonian on this series. It focused attention in this building in the Capitol like it hasn't been before. As a candidate last year, I emphasized how debilitating, how limiting I thought money in our political system had become. But my knowledge was kind of anecdotal. I knew about Southern Oregon. I knew about environmental issues, especially forest issues. The Oregonian came at it systematically, and I think put it forward in a way that can no longer be ignored. So this afternoon, in fact, my committee will be working on a constitutional referral to the voters. There are plenty of ideas around here about how to deal with this in law. I like some of them, some not so much. A lot of leadership from the metro area, Portland and Multnomah County, in the last 3 years have both passed what I view to be really good measures. But the problem is there's one thing we haven't gotten really super clear on in this state, and that is that the legislature, local governments, the people by the initiative process have the power to regulate and limit money in politics. That still has not been a settled issue, and that's the first thing to do to settle that. So what we are debating today, what we're talking about today in committee, is sending to the voters, as you know, to change the Constitution in any way. We need the approval of the voters. Send to the voters a measure next year that would say, yes, we have the power to do that, like just about every other state. It's frustrating because the obstacle to this has been this sense in official circles that we can't do much about money in politics because of the Supreme Court decision, state Supreme Court's decision that Phil just mentioned, and an attorney general's opinion in 2001 that was even more sweeping. And it's made this place really timid about campaign finance reform. So step number one is getting crystal clear in the Constitution that we can do this like other states. Other states have very similar, sometimes identical free speech language in their constitutions, and they're doing fine, limiting expenditures, requiring disclosures that show who paid for what materials, but we've been held back. So our focus right now is getting the voters' agreement that, yes, we can do this, and that's what we'll be debating today.
All right. We were talking about money and politics and the corresponding laxness of environmental regulation in Oregon, as pointed out by the Oregonian series, Polluted by Money. So let me turn back to Rob Davis, who reported this series. You can draw a straight line. I mean, you have cases in the four-part series where you can show that environmental regulations either were lax or just weren't particularly enforced because of the intervention of people who got money from corporations?
It sure looks that way in a lot of cases. I'll give you one example. The oil train, the Union Pacific oil train that crashed in the gorge in 2016 and caused a big fire in Mosier. I had actually been writing about that issue for a number of years prior, and bills had been going to the legislature and dying. After the Mosier oil train accident, there appeared to be a recognition in the building that they were really needed to do something. California and Washington had both put a fee on railroads there to pay to make sure that they were ready for oil spills, because these trains had introduced risks of catastrophic spills where oil had never really moved before. And so in 2017 in the legislature, a bill came forward, and then Representative Mark Johnson took a $5,000 check from Union Pacific and subsequently introduced an amendment with this bill moving forward to allow this fee to happen that was supported by the railroads, allow the fee to happen, but the spill plans would be secret. They wouldn't be disclosed by public records requests or by subpoena. And it was like a new characterization of secret documents that the state was going to create. And this got worked into the process. And we ended up actually writing a story about it. And the legislature pulled it back. But you can see the clear line through there. Now, Union Pacific and Mark Johnson would never say that there was that connection. I think that when reasonable people follow the money, you can see what appears to be clear cause and effect on a lot of issues.
You bring up the point that seems to be made by every politician ever, which is they say no contribution ever changed my vote. But
right.
It seems like if you
my
look
vote's
at...
My vote's not for sale.
Right. Okay. So you've heard this too, Jeff Golden, obviously.
All the time.
Have you said it yourself?
I never have because I had never taken that money.
So then, Rob Davis, you all you can really do is look at the timing then and say, okay, look, this happened and then this happened. I mean, because you can't read people's minds, I guess, is what it gets down to.
No, but you can read their emails. And again, what you see is I think that there is a culture in American politics. There's certainly a culture in Oregon politics. All of these PACs, all of these committees that lawmakers have, they're called friends of whoever, friends of Kate Brown. And people who give money want to be friends with her, and she needs the money to run for office. That's true across the board. I talked to one donor who said, when somebody votes, I want them to think about what their friends have to say. And this is, somebody who's given tens of thousands of dollars to be what he described as friends with people. Well, I had a friend over for dinner on Sunday night, and I didn't have to pay her $20,000 to come over and eat with us. And I think that people in politics across the country, but here as well, have developed this culture where they can tell themselves, so that they can sleep at night, that the $10,000 that they took from somebody had no effect on them. But you do at that point know that they're a generous supporter of you, and they're helping you rise to power. They're helping you rise to leadership. They're helping you get elected. And when they raise an issue, it would seem confounding if you were not inclined to listen to them a little bit more clearly than somebody who hadn't given you a dime. And when you look at where we are as a state on environmental issues, and you look at the disproportionate giving, people are listening to their campaign donors, and by and large, those campaign donors are corporations and not individual, your neighbor writing you a check.
We are talking about money in politics and pollution in Oregon and the straight line drawn from one to the other by Rob Davis in his series for the Oregonian Oregon Live, Polluted by Money. J.T. Stapleton joins us as well from the National Institute on Money and Politics. We have former Secretary of State Phil Kiesling on the line as well, and State Senator Jeff Golden of Ashland, who chairs a newly formed Senate Committee on Campaign Finance Reform. You can join us on the exchange, 800-838-3760, with your questions, concerns, comments. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a phone call from Tawasi in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey there. I appreciate you taking my call. I have a kind of complex question. Campaign finance, in the conversation that we often hear on media like this, revolves around the money being given from the donor to the politician. But there's another step in the process where the money goes from the politician to the ad agency. And I was hoping you guys could address that topic. And then also, you know, if it's sensible to talk about it, how maybe that type of process affects public perception, you know, around issues like spraying glyphosate on clear cuts or Jordan Cove or whatever issues ad agencies then push on us.
All right.
Oh, it's not fair.
Thanks for that, Tawasi. Appreciate it. Phil Kiesling, any thoughts on that in your experience?
Yeah, it's a terrific question. I'm actually going to refine the question a little bit and talk about the effect on television and radio outlet and media. Because in some parts of the cycle, the quarter where the November election is being held, ad revenues from political candidates often constitute a real substantial portion of the revenues that come into TV and radio stations that are located, you know, here in Oregon. And you know, when you're so dependent on that kind of revenue from political candidates, does it have a chilling effect on, or a, oh, we won't look too hard over in that corner effect on the reporting side of these organizations? At the end of the day, news organizations are businesses. Now, candidates don't spend very much on print advertising, so you don't get as much with traditional print back in my day. But now, of course, you have online advertising, which is becoming an increasingly important revenue source, even for you know, outlets like the Oregonian. So these vast gushers of money that are in the system ripple through and have all sorts of, I think, effects. And often the single biggest effect isn't the bad bill that passes. But as Rob's story pointed out and others have, it's the good bill that never even gets submitted or gets a hearing or gets a vote.
Or that gets watered down to almost nothingness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's what doesn't happen. And money often prevents important action that needs to be taken. And, you know, I thought Rob's series was terrific as well. I mean, just really transformational, I think, in terms of the discussion that's been long overdue in the state. But I'd also point out, I've looked at things like, you know, the discussion about things like our failure to really grapple when we could have with the PERS issue, which is now so much worse than it could have been if we'd done things back in the 90s. Part of that is the reluctance to address that issue on the side of people on the Democratic side of the aisle, mostly because of large contributions and very focused contributions by some of the public employee unions. So while they're dwarfed in the aggregate, they're often very focused on a handful of issues, one of which has been putting us in a position in Oregon of having a huge problem with liabilities for public pensions, including for people like yours truly, quite honestly. So,
Jeff, may I jump in here?
Go ahead, Senator Golden.
Jeff here. Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate the caller's question, and it gets to something that I think is really important in this conversation. I think we are living in the past. The political establishment is living circa 2010 about money and politics and how much you need to win. Phil just quoted a, you know, mind-boggling figure for what it supposedly takes to win a legislative seat. He said $1 million. And this is a different conversation in different parts of the state. I'm from the Rogue Valley. We don't have a big expensive media market the way the metro area does. But politics is changing faster than the political establishment is realizing. And there is ample evidence that the big dollars spent in politics on mass media are not effective anymore. because we're not talking about persuasion like we used to. That's what mass media is about. We are talking about identifying voters and getting out the vote on the ground, which is a much less expensive proposition. So I'm inviting my colleagues to revisit the conventional wisdom about what it takes to win a race, what actually has been winning recent races. And if we can realize that you can win a legislative seat today in 2019 for $150,000 or $200,000 instead of $1 million, then the incentives of sort of looking the other way and maybe compromising some principles to take big money change. So I think that's an important piece of this conversation.
All right. I want to bring J.T. Steepleton from the National Institute on Money and Politics back in for a moment here, because I want to get an idea how we compare with the rest of the country. Is there a trend one way or the other, either greater limits or fewer?
For the most part, it's stagnant, but you're talking about in terms of contribution limits?
Right.
Yeah, it's fairly stagnant, though. A good state to look toward would be Missouri. In 2008, they got rid of all their contribution limits and in the middle of a campaign, and then including direct corporation contributions, allowing that. Up until 2016, the initiative process they took advantage of reestablished them. And now going forward, we'll be able to see kind of how that changed. So Oregon, I could really look to a state like that. Beyond that, you know, they fluctuate a little bit, the limits, and sometimes they're tied to inflation. But on that level, no, it's not changing a whole lot.
All right. Money and Politics and Pollution in Oregon and the Connection Between, as reported by Rob Davis in The Oregonian. We also have another panel of experts with us. You can join the conversation on The Exchange when we return in a minute 10. Final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Oregon has some of the loosest campaign finance limits in the country, and not coincidentally, some of the weakest environmental regulations, certainly compared with its neighbors in Washington and California. This is all demonstrated in a series called Polluted by Money by Rob Davis at the Oregonian Oregon Live. We also have with us J.T. Steepleton from the National Institute on Money and Politics, Senator Jeff Golden from Ashland, who chairs a Senate Committee on Campaign Finance Reform, and former Secretary of State Phil Kiesling. You can join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Misha in Eugene. Thank you for waiting. Welcome to The Exchange.
I worked on a campaign finance reform initiative that Lloyd Mardet, he had a populist guy that... it actually passed one time, but since it amended the Constitution, kind of like what Jeff Golden says, that needed to pass, but that part didn't pass. But Dan Meek, the attorney, helped draft it. He said that Enron Corporation was located here in Oregon because, but if they had passed. If that had passed, the most amount of money someone could give to, like, a local candidate running for office would be, like $25 or $50. That would make a difference because now, like, in terms of the county commissioner's race, somebody from a timber family, someone contributed, like, $25,000 maybe. Mm-hmm. But that would make a difference in terms of the people would get to maybe represent, like, the interest of people.
All right, let's get some numbers from Phil Kiesling. Phil, you're talking about the 96 limits, which he may be talking about. Those are fairly severe limits, weren't they?
Yeah, for a statewide race, I think the limit was $500. I can't quite remember what it was for legislative races, but I think it was in the neighborhood of $100 or $200. And those were pretty common limits back in the day. Now, you could get as many people as possible. And one of the things that Oregon did and still does is it has a form of public financing through the income tax system where the state has long encouraged small contributions from individuals. So you can, as an individual, give $50 in a given year, $100 for a joint return, and it's a tax credit. So it's not a deduction. You can get the full amount back. Now, even with that encouragement of small donors, very few Oregonians have taken advantage of it. There's some limits on it now on income. But we've had that, and then, of course, we did have those limits. But I think the caller is exactly right. We had a lot of people who cheered when that court decision came down, and it went back to Katie Barr, the door, the sky's the limit. I used to say when I was Secretary of State, someone could literally give me $1 million to run my campaign. Not that they ever would, and I certainly have to report it. We do have disclosure laws, but literally that could happen while a U.S. senator could only get a couple $1,000s from the same individual donor. It was crazy then, and I think it's still crazy now. And this has been such a long overdue, long festering problem that if the 2019 legislature can't take action on this, I think Oregonians would rightly be asking, what on earth are they spending their time doing other than, you know, protecting their own election chances by wanting to continue this system.
Rob Davis, one of the points I want to cover is the double dipping, as it's pointed, the use of campaign money given to legislators during the legislative session. How does that work?
They don't take money during the session, but they are able to spend the money far more freely than they would in a lot of other states. And the things that you see campaign money being spent on, you know, I naively, before we examined every single cent that these people have spent in the last decade, I naively thought that it was consultants and yard signs and mailers. It's not. It's car repairs and dry cleaning and, you know, hotel stays to go to continuing education for legislators and all sorts of things. When you're a candidate, you're sort of limited to spending to run your race. Once you're in office, though, that becomes your bank account that you can say, go to the sports bar on Friday night to meet a constituent and talk about a law or a proposal or some issue that's bothering them over beers, and then you bill it to your campaign account. And so lawmakers get $149 a day for each day that they're in session to cover their meals and lodging in Salem, because there's an expense that they incur. What many of them do is then bill their campaign accounts for those expenses, and it allows them to put that money directly into their pockets. During the time when the legislature is not in session, they get $450 to $750 a month to cover their travel and phone expenses. And again, what they do is bill those to their campaign, then lets them put that money straight into their pocket.
We have talked previously in this hour about laws in terms of things that got passed or didn't get passed or got passed weaker. But it's not just about laws, as you point out in the series, Rob, because even with existing sets of regulations and things, holy hell got rained down on regulators sometimes. Talk about, for example, the NTEC case. And I think what happened here was there was just a discussion from the Department of Environmental Quality about maybe we should put monitors around this NTEC company. And what happened?
They got gagged by a judge that prevented them from talking about it, which was, I think, unprecedented in this state. This is the Department of Environmental Quality. You know, lawmakers who had taken money from this company subsequently helped to stall a program to limit toxic air pollution. They stalled the department's acceptance of free money, a federal grant to study diesel pollution in and around the Portland area. And, you know, lawmakers didn't hide their displeasure. They very clearly said, you know, we don't trust you because of what you did with this company, which was to, you know, the department had seen computer modeling that suggested that there may be high levels of a cancer-causing solvent around the business, and they wanted to deploy air monitors to figure out whether they were right or not. And that happened 2 years ago, and they still haven't put the monitors out. They say they're going to do it later this year, but you know, they very clearly got the message from Democrats and Republicans alike to back off, and they did.
J.T. Stapleton, when you look at both Oregon's money and across the country, is there still the same situation we've come to know where corporations, when they can give money, tend to give it equally to Democrats and Republicans, or is it a little different in Oregon?
No, that's generally the case across the country. It's hard sometimes to identify them as corporations, or we just have to say non-individuals, because they may be something like an LLC or an ideological organization, something like that. And we found that, when it's on the business side, they tend to split them fairly evenly. I won't say it's 50-50, whereas individuals will oftentimes just gravitate to one particular political party. It's no shocker that people think they're trying to get a seat at the table when they see that. There's no clearer case to be made for that when you see the vast majority of money going to incumbents from corporate entities or business associations, things like that. They really prefer incumbents who, as we all know, typically win re-election in large number.
Senator Jeff Golden, let's talk about the work then of the committee that you chair a little more. This is a new Senate committee on campaign finance reform. It did not exist before this session, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
So I guess that should be one indication of the lack of alacrity in the legislature about wanting to reform campaign finance?
Yeah, I think there's a crescendo now in Oregon, more and more awareness. Thanks again, Oregonian. The very large donations from individuals to the governor's race last year focus some attention. And people, you know, my experience on the campaign trail is that people of both parties are tired of the inaction from Salem on pressing issues, environmental and others, and have started to see a tie to campaign money. I think that, on the front doorstep talking, you know, it was almost universal that people agreed that big money is stalling us out in dealing with some severe problems and actually have some solutions. So when I asked the Senate president, when I was asked what committee assignments I'd like, I'd say, I'll take anything, but I'd sure think it's time for a new campaign finance committee. He agreed.
So you talked about the constitutional referral that would allow us to ensure in the Oregon Constitution that voters do have the power to regulate campaign donations,
right,
and spending. But there's been talk about that not including the 94 past limits. Is that right?
The current version, we had a lot of discussion about this. And the current, we said, how far back should we go? And some of the limits, so the measure that was talked about a lot was actually a 2006 initiative, Measure 47. I believe those limits had a lot of parts to it. Were $100 for legislative races, $500 for statewide, i.e. governor, secretary of state. And that's been in abeyance. And there was a lot of discussion, including with the petitioners, the people who produced that. And what we ended up with was enabling laws starting in 2016. So it would not include 47. It would include fortify and legitimate the ordinances that have happened in Multnomah County and Portland in 2016 and 2018, which are significant limits. And then it would also probably, before we get out of here in this session, there would be new law, not constitutional amendment, specifying limits, and that'll be negotiated with people like the ones who created Measure 47. And that law would take effect if the constitutional amendment is passed.
All right. So there would be a provision for something like what passed with Measure 47, which is 500 for statewide office.
Frankly,
and 100
I doubt. I kind of like the Measure 47 limits. I'm having trouble. This goes back to different ideas of how much money you need in politics. My guess is that the statute that would accompany the constitutional amendment would have higher dollars than Measure 47 did.
Rob Davis, you obviously talked to a lot of legislators for the series, including retired ones. Do you get a sense both pre and post publication of how they think this looks and their mood for changing it?
I talked to a lot of folks in sort of confrontational interviews before the story ran. After the series ran, with the exception of Senator Golden, it's been near silent out of that building. Not a lot of lawmakers have had a lot to say about our series on both sides of the aisle, which I have found interesting, because the reception by our readers has been absolutely overwhelming. I have been a journalist for 20 years, and I have never gotten more feedback from people saying, "My God, what is going on in this state?" Never gotten more feedback about any story that I have ever written. And I think that says a lot about the resonance that this issue has with Oregonians. Oregonians care about the environment. It's why they live here. It's what they love about the state. And I think that they were alarmed at the turn that this state took in kind of the post Tom McCall era. You know, the former governor was worried that environmental concerns would just be the fad of the day. And among the populace, I don't think that has been the case. But in the legislature, I think it's very clearly been the case. And I think that Tom McCall's fears in that respect have borne out.
Well, and then one great example from the time is that Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality actually predates the federal EPA. And we look at a very different Oregon from the series Polluted by Money. Rob Davis from the Oregonian Oregon Live, thank you so much for joining us on The Exchange.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Also want to thank J.T. Stapleton, a researcher at the National Institute on Money and Politics, Phil Kiesling, the former Secretary of State, and Senator Jeff Golden of Ashland, chairing that Senate Committee on Campaign Finance Reform. Thank you all, and best of luck on future endeavors here.